It's Marketplace Tech Report from American Public Media for Monday, January 31st, 2011. I'm John Moe. The situation in Egypt is arguably the largest political uprising since the internet became a major part of our world. Protesters use Twitter, Facebook, text messages, emails to coordinate efforts and stay informed. Then came word late last week that Egypt had shut off internet access. The move drew a reaction from Secretary of State Hillary Clinton.
We urge the Egyptian authorities to allow peaceful protests and to reverse the unprecedented steps it has taken to cut off communications.
But the protests continued anyway and intensified. Jillian York is with the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard, and she's been following events in Egypt closely. She says the internet was never completely taken down. One ISP, that's internet service provider, has been running the whole time.
The way the internet in Egypt works is that there's no central government choke point, so the government can't just, you know, flip a switch and shut the internet off. Rather, they had to force individual ISPs to shut down, and that's exactly what they did. For some reason, one ISP that has about 8% of the market share was able to stay online. No one has been able to confirm exactly why this is, but one group that did an analysis of the internet, Renesis, a group out of New Hampshire actually, said that they thought that it had something to do with the stock market.
What was the significance of that shutdown, of that move that took place in Egypt? Because, you know, here in the U.S., when you think the internet would get shut off, that's really hard to even imagine.
This was huge. You know, Egypt already, even with only about 30% internet penetration, Egypt already has a huge blogosphere, a huge social media community. And, you know, these are people using these tools for entertainment and enjoyment, but also using them for social and political protests for the past several years. And so by shutting the internet off, they really limited necessary communications in many of these cases. Prior to the shutdown, people had been using Facebook, Twitter, even Google Docs to organize. I saw one Google Doc that was collecting email addresses from a certain Facebook group in case Facebook was blocked. So people were really thinking ahead.
So how have people gotten around it?
Some people have had continued access to this one ISP, Noor, and a lot of the sort of usual suspects on Twitter from Egypt have been tweeting throughout and getting news out regardless. But at the same time, a lot of people have found access to dial-up. And what's really interesting about this is that when you look at a lot of the folks who are out there protesting, and a lot of Egypt's population in general, we're talking about a huge number of people under 30 who probably have not really used dial-up much at all. So it was almost like having to learn a new skill. And there were a couple of Egyptian expats who run a popular blog who had written up a list of instructions on how to use dial-up, on how to get out to the right numbers and things like that. And they'd also had a list of numbers up there. So I think that a lot of people have certainly taken advantage of that.
Jillian says the move to shut off communications came only after massive online organizing efforts had already happened. The fuse had been lit.
Several days prior to January 25th, I saw some of the people that I follow on Twitter from Egypt planning in advance what hashtag they were going to use. And that's, you know, where you put the hash symbol and then choose a short term that, you know, stays in people's memory that makes the subject easier to search. And so in this case, they chose Jan, J-A-N, 25, which they then used anytime they were talking about the protests and about the planned demonstrations, and it caught on. And so now when you look at Twitter, you can see that everyone from CNN to Al Jazeera to Rachel Maddow to Egyptians on the ground are using this hashtag to sort of aggregate information about Egypt.
I love football, but it makes me feel inferior. I can't run like that or throw like that, but the new Super Bowl Twitter page from the NFL makes me feel better, because it's terrible. After sbtwitter.nfl.com finally loads, you see obtuse, out-of-context tweets from players on the right side of the page. On the left, a weird green visualization that shows different squares with words like Steelers and Green Bay. It's like Mondrian of the NFL. The squares grow or shrink relative to how often the terms are being mentioned on Twitter. Pointless? Yes. And heartening. If the Super Bowl, this multi-zillion dollar, highly produced operation, can have a Twitter presence this barfy, it gives hope for us nerds. The jocks are our physical superiors, but they have a long way to go in web design. This is Marketplace Tech Report. I'm John Moe.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.